Even though there are many who throughout the year are careful not to clap and dance on Shabbos and Yom Tov, on Simchas Torah, everyone seems to be lenient to, you know, engage in clapping and dancing, and therefore, you know, as Isru Chag of Sukkot, and we're just recently emerged from Simchas Torah, I wanted to perhaps reflect on this issue of clapping and dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov in general, and why is it that there are some who are careful, some who are more lenient, and why is it that, you know, everyone seems to be lenient, at least with regards to Simchas Torah. It also happens to be Minyan de Yoima is that the source for this halacha is today's daf in the daf Yoimi, Gemara and Masechtas Beitz on daf Lamed. But there the Gemara says, Ein metavchen ve'im mesakten ve'im merakten. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, one is not supposed to engage in clapping and dancing. And Rashi explains that this is included in the larger issue of playing musical instruments on Shabbos and Yom Tov that is generally prohibited. Gzeir Hashem yisakten kleishir, because the instrument might break, and one might be tempted to fix it in order to continue playing that instrument. And if one will fix the musical instrument, then Shabbos Yom Tov could potentially violate an Iser Deiraisa of Mesakin Mona or Baina Bekelim or an Iser Midrabanan. You know, whatever it is, you can certainly violate an Iser Midrabanan by fixing a broken Kli. And since there is a potential for an Iser Deiraisa in fixing the Kli, Chazal prohibited one from playing musical instruments on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Included within that larger Gzeira was that one is not allowed to clap or dance on Shabbos either, lest, you know, because I guess sometimes that might be accompanied by musical instruments as well, clapping and dancing, and therefore the same fear exists, the same chashash, that if there's musical accompaniment, right, instrumental accompaniment to your clapping and dancing, if the instrument will, you know, break, you might be tempted to fix it, and therefore it should be included in the Gzeira Shem Yisakim Kleishir. However, even in the times of the Gemara, this seems to be that it was not universally either known or practiced. The Gemara says, now we see that people do this. And no one, you know, protests. Ain't paitza pel mitzavtziv. No, so why is this? If it's prohibited, why is it that no one says anything when they see people doing this on Shabbos? So the Gemara concludes, Hanech lahem li Yisrael, mutiv shushayigim v'al yumezidim. Let them continue in their practice, because better that they do so inadvertently and unknowingly than do so, you know, being aware of the prohibition, and they're going to continue to do it b'mezid. Meaning, they had no reasonable assumption that they could convince people to change their behavior and to stop clapping and dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And therefore, since they were presumably going to continue to do it even after they were informed of the prohibition, better that they do so unknowingly, inadvertently, b'shoigeg, rather than do so knowingly, b'mezid, because the assumption is you weren't going to be able to convince them to stop doing it in the first place. And in that sense, this phrase, mutav shushoigeg v'al yumezidin, is really, I guess, synonymous with the Gemara Masechta Sivamis, which tells us that even though we have a mitzvah of hechech tochiach hasamisecha, a mitzvah to give teichach, a rebuke to your friend, if I have a reasonable assumption, or, you know, it's almost a certainty that there's no way I'm going to be able to convince him to change his behavior, then you really shouldn't rebuke your friend. Just the opposite. K'shem shemitzvah loymar davar hanishma, kach mitzvah sheloy loymar davar she'eino nishma. Just like there's a mitzvah to say toichacha when it will be received, and you have a chance of changing people's behavior, so too, and there's a mitzvah to give toichacha in that setting, so too there's a mitzvah to refrain from giving toichacha in a setting, a situation where it's almost certain that I will be unable to change the course of behavior, the behavior of, you know, the prohibited behavior or the inappropriate behavior of others. So in such a setting, it's inappropriate to give teichacha because it will not be well received. So k'shem shemitzvah lo yamadav nishma, just like there's a mitzvah to give teichacha when it is appropriate, kach mitzvah shelo yamadav shenu mishna, it's a mitzvah not to give teichacha when it will not be well received. And similarly, you know, I guess as one step, you know, beyond that, so we would say, therefore, in that kind of a setting, mutav shushayig and value mezidim, better that they continue to do the isa b'shayig, because not to be able to convince them to change, so better that they do so b'shayig than they do so b'mezid. It's really based, predicated upon that statement of the Gemara Masechta Yevamos with regards to the issue of teichacha. This comes up all the time, in different situations where people act inappropriately, or we suspect that they'll continue to act inappropriately, even if we will inform them of the relevant halachas and prohibitions. And in such a situation, it's important to exhibit or demonstrate self-restraint and not to say something, because it will be counterproductive. So Shlomo Zalman therefore writes that Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasan, just an interesting Hechel Timtzav, this kind of, interesting example of this principle, the Shmir Shabbos Kochas, quotes from Shlomo Zalman, that if the Eruv falls down on Shabbos in a large community or something like that, Mutav loy lafarsim, b'chol eifen ki rabim lo yishmu b'koylam umutav shushayim v'al yumei zidim. Because you probably will not be able to convince everyone to stop carrying. There'll be those who will carry anyway. And better that they do so inadvertently than they do so b'meizid, being informed that the Eruv has already fallen down. That's an interesting application of this halacha. Rav Moshe disagrees in Igros Moshe in terms of communal policy and argues that it's better to announce that the Eruv is down because it's not really fair to the people who would listen, that they are now going to be carrying also because they're uninformed that the Eruv fell down. And if you would give them to Chacha, you would tell them, hey, the Eruv fell down, they're going to stop, in their tracks and they're not going to carry anymore. So we're sacrificing their Shmirah Shabbos, for the benefit of those who will not listen. And they're going to continue carrying even after they're informed that the Eruv has fallen down. So it's really not fair. You're sacrificing the Shmirah Shabbos of those who would listen for those who would not listen. So Rav Moshe says, you have to announce that it fell down, and those who don't listen, don't listen, but you have to do so for the benefit of those who would listen. And it's perhaps already based on the Magen Avraham, and there's a Machzis HaShekel, that if you're dealing with a large tzibor, a Beis HaKnesses, that has different populations, demographics, some who would listen, some who wouldn't listen, in such a situation, you have to announce what is correct for the benefit of those who do listen, or who would listen, and we shouldn't be inhibited from doing so, or refrain from doing so, because there might be some in the larger group who would, who would not listen. That's Rav Moshe's argument. Rav Chaim had a different argument, not to announce that the Eruv fell down, because people don't even realize that they're doing the malach in the first place. Meaning, it isn't even a shaygeg. They don't realize that they're doing this activity in the first place. L'mashal, a shaygeg is a person who's, obligated to bring a chatos, on Shabbos for violating Shabbos. B'shaygeg is a person who forgets that turning on lights on Shabbos is prohibited. Or he forgets that today is Shabbos, right? He walks into the room and he turns on the light like he does every other day of the week. Momentarily, failing to pay attention to the fact that today is Shabbos. That's what he realized. He was turning on the light. He just forgot for a moment that today is Shabbos. So that's a shoygeg. A person like that has to bring if the Beis HaMikdash should be in existence, has to bring a carbon chatas. But then there's a different kind of individual that's a misasik. I don't even realize I'm doing this activity in the first place. A guy, there's two pumpkins on the ground. So one pumpkin is attached to the ground. The other pumpkin is already detached. So the guy means to pick up the pumpkin that is detached. By chance, he happens to pick up the pumpkin that is attached. So that's a malach of toilesh on Shabbos. But he thought he was picking up the pumpkin that is detached. So his hands got confused. He didn't even realize that he was doing this activity. He thought he was doing a different activity. So that's not even a shaygeg, that's misasek, which according to many is not even an iser in the first place. He's not chayv to bring a karma chatos. So Reb Chaim argued that a person who doesn't even realize that he's carrying, because he thinks that there's an Eruv here, he's going about his business based on the assumption there's an Eruv, and he has reason to believe that there was an Eruv, because there was an Eruv until it fell down. So he doesn't even realize that he's carrying. Not that he doesn't know carrying is Usher on Shabbos. Not that he forgot that today is Shabbos and therefore he's carrying. He thinks he's not carrying because there's an Eruv, and then all of a sudden there's no Eruv, and now he's carrying. He doesn't even realize he's doing the malach in the first place. That's a misasik. He's not even a shaygeg. And therefore, there's no, iser even, to speak of in the first place. Better, therefore, not to tell him that the Eruv fell down and to remove his status as a misasik. So that was Reb Chaim's argument. But either way, it plays into the calculations of this very complex and thorny issue of what to do if the Eruv falls down on Shabbos, this principle of Mutav Shu Shoyin Vali Mezidin. And the Gemara explains that that's the reason that we don't protest against people who clap and dance on Shabbos, even though it is Aser, Gzer Hashem, Yisak, and Kleshir. Maybe usually clapping and dancing is accompanied by music, which could involve instruments. The instrument might break. If it breaks on Shabbos, you might come to fix it, and therefore it's prohibited to clap and dance on Shabbos. Why don't we popularize this issue more, make a bigger deal about it? Because Mutav Shu Shoyin Vali Mezidin, there probably not going to be some at least who will not listen to us, at all, even after being informed of the Yisr. However, Taisus on that Gemara, in Masechtas Beitza, writes that this was only prohibited in the times where people were knowledgeable about how to go about fixing broken instruments. And he says, Shema Yisak and Kleshir, Mi Udidan, says Taisus, Shari, clapping and dancing on Shabbos is permitted. The Dav could be a man, Shayu Bikian, Lasus Kleshir. They knew how to make instruments, Shayak Lemigzar. It makes sense to make this decree. We do not know how to fix kelim if they will break a musical instrument, and therefore this gzeira no longer applies. So in other words, what Tosis is telling us, since the reason for the Gzeira no longer applies, because none of us know how to fix instruments if they break, the Gzeira itself no longer applies too. That is a very disturbing comment of Tosfos, because it seems to fly in the face of another Gemara Maseches Beitzah earlier on Daf Hey. But the Gemara tells us when Chazal established or initiated an enactment, you know, or a piece of legislation, Midrabanan, that piece of legislation, that Gzeira, that Takana, remains in force even if the reason that precipitated it, that motivated it in the first place, no longer continues to apply until such time that a subsequent Beis Din will come and overrule or remove this Gzeira or Takana. But until such time that it's repealed, the piece of legislation remains in effect, even if the reason that motivated it no longer applies. Gemara says over there, and Daf Hei Amud Aleph, Davar Shebe Minyan, something that was established by a Beis Din that had the proper quorum, Tzarech Minyan Acher La'atiro, in order to repeal it requires another subsequent Beis Din that also has, you know, a sufficient number, quorum, and legitimacy in terms of chachma that comes and repeals that piece of legislation. Otherwise, it remains intact. And this is derived from the Psukim in Parashas Yisro in connection with Maimon Har Sinai, where the pasuk tells us Moshe Rabbeinu instructed Klal Yisrael not to ascend the mountain and to separate from their wives for a period of 3 days in preparation for Maimon Har Sinai. At the conclusion of Kabbalah Sator and Maimon Har Sinai, the Bnei Yisrael were not permitted to ascend the mountain. They were not permitted to return to their wives until Moshe Rabbeinu gave them explicit permission to do so by telling them, "Shuvu lachem lo aleichem, you can now go home and be with your wives." And after Kabbalah Sator, you can now ascend the mountain. Even though the reason for it was quite obvious, you had to separate from your wife for 3 days to prepare for Kabbalah Satayra. You weren't allowed to ascend the mountain because it was become holy during Kabbalah Satayra. So you would say, well, once the reason no longer applies, obviously these enactments, these statements, these prohibitions would no longer apply as well, and it should be implicit. But that's not the case. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu had to explicitly tell them, no, now it's permitted for you to ascend the mountain. Now it's permitted for you to go home and be with your wives, which implies Davar Shebe Minyan, when something, an enactment, Gzeira, Takana is established, it requires a subsequent statement to remove it. It doesn't cease to be applicable just because the reason, you know, is no longer applicable. And this halakha is formalized by the Rambam in Hilchas Mamrin, Perek Beis, Halakha Beis, where the Rambam says, Beis in Shegazu Gzeira, Tiknu Takana, once Beis in established Gzeira, and they, or made a Takana, and the Takana, you know, spread throughout, was accepted by the community of Klal Yisrael. So then, Eino Yaakov Avatos Dvarav, you cannot undo it. Look at the last line. Afilu Batala Tam Shabiglalu Gazura Rishonim, even if the reason no longer applies, Hiskinu, or the reason why they made this establishment, Ein Hachreini Mechom Avato Achu Gedoyu Mehem. The subsequent Beis Din has to be Gadol Mehem B'Chachmah B'Minyan in number and in wisdom in order to overrule, to repeal the legislation of the original Beis Din. But just because the reason no longer applies, if you will batel hatam shebiglo gazor Rishonim, the Takana, the Gzeira, remains in force. So over here, how could Tosfos say that just because the reason that motivated them to prohibit clapping and dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov was because Gzeira Shem Yisak and Klishir, since that reason no longer applies, since we're not knowledgeable, we're not skilled enough, experts in fixing Kalim, that even if it will break, we would know how to fix it. So since that reason no longer applies, the Gzeira no longer applies too, and now clapping and dancing is permitted on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Just because the reason no longer applies, why should the Gzeira not continue to apply? Look, we just celebrated, right, Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni we have because they weren't Bekiyan, because the communities live far away from the place where they declared Rosh Chodesh in Eretz Yisrael. And since it took time for the messengers to arrive to faraway places, they had to keep 2 days of Yom. They weren't aware of when Rosh Chodesh was declared, but already by the middle of the month, even though it was the 15th of the month, they weren't aware which day was Rosh Chodesh. They had to keep 2 days. Mitam Safik. And nonetheless, even though we don't have Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi HaRi'iyah anymore, we continue to have, we have a fixed calendar, we know which days Rosh Chodesh, we continue to practice 2 days of Yom Tov in Chutz Laaretz. Because the Gemara says, "Shochu mitam, hizor b'minig avet sechem b'deichem." They sent from Babel. You should be careful about the, you know, the minig that was already established, which is, you know, along the lines of "Davar shebe minyan tzarech minyan achar atiroi." That just because something was established for a specific reason and the reason no longer applies doesn't mean that the gzeira no longer applies. The legislation remains intact until such time that a subsequent Beis Din will overrule that or repeal that original piece of legislation. So Tosfos is very problematic, very controversial. This Tosfos. But the truth of the matter is, it's not only this Tosfos that has, you know, runs afoul of this principle of Darvish Abaminian, Tzarech Minin Nachal Atir. We have it elsewhere too. For example, the Gemara says in Masechtas Ksubas, the Chazal established a Ksubas Benin Dichrin. What does a Ksubas Benin Dichrin mean? When a woman would get married, so she would typically be given a dowry by her father in order to encourage, you know, to make the marriage more financially lucrative for the husband. There were many girls who need to get married. Why should the husband, you know, choose to marry, you know, this young lady? So one of the reasons might be because she has a financial, dowry that she'll be bringing into the marriage, which would make the whole relationship that much more attractive. So it was important to give a dowry to your daughter in order to get married. But fathers were afraid to do this because if they had an estate, they're going to give part of that estate to the daughter. What could happen? The daughter could bring in part of his estate, you know, the father's estate into the marriage. But it might turn out that the daughter will die prematurely. If the daughter dies, you know, after having two or three children, then, or however many children, whatever, then the husband will take a second wife. Second wife he's going to have, you know, another, let's say, you know, two or three children. When he dies, the wife's estate that she brought into the marriage from her father is now going to go be Yerusha to all of his six children or four children, however many children he has. It's going to be distributed equally amongst his heirs. Because when she brings the dowry into the marriage, she gives it over to the husband, Mashakon, so Yishakon Abayla, and it's going to become part of his larger estate. And that's going to get distributed equally amongst his heirs if he'll end up taking a second wife, because the first wife will pass away prematurely. So the fathers were reluctant to give large dowries out of a fear that maybe someone else will end up, some other family will end up taking their, you know, their portfolio. So in order to encourage fathers to give larger dowries to their daughters, Chazal established a ksubas benin dichrin, which really limited the halachas of Yerusha, in which normally would state that a husband, you know, father's estate is distributed equally amongst his heirs. They said, you know what? Whatever the wife brought in as a dowry to this marriage should only be distributed amongst her children and should not be distributed at all amongst the children of the second wife. Now, if there is never a second wife, of course, the Benin Dichrin is obsolete. You know, it has no effect. But if he will take a second wife, it will be very important that the dowry that she brings in will only go to her children. That was known as Ksubas Benin Dichrin HaTakonas Chazal. So the Rosh writes in Masechtas Ksubas that this no longer applies in their times because fathers were giving such large dowries, because the pressure of Shidduchim was so great, giving such large dowries to the daughters, they said, halavai, they should give to the sons as much as they give to the daughters, because they were giving so much away to the daughters. So the fathers were not giving small dowries out of a fear that someone else was going to inherit their estate. They were giving large dowries anyway. So the Rosh quotes from some Geonim that said, Ksubas Benin Dichrin no longer applies, because the reason that motivated it no longer applies. And then the Rosh quotes from Rameir HaLevi, from Rabbeinu Yoina, who said, what are you talking about? Just because the reason that precipitated the Ksubas Benin Dichrin no longer applies, the Takana should continue to apply. Davar Shebeminyan. This was a form of Takanam Chazal. Doesn't fall away just because the reason no longer applies. But this opinion of Ramatis Yogon was, no, that since the reason no longer applies, the halacha, he wasn't aware of the Gemara Masechtas Beitzah on Daf Hey, Davar B'Shebeminyan, Tzarech Minyan Achol Atiro. How could he say this? Seems to run against that Gemara Masechtas Beitzah. So it's not only a problem with Taisus and Masechtas Beitzah with regards to clapping and dancing, it's also a problem with the Goinim over here that are quoted by the Rosh Masechtas Ksubas. But there's a Tshuvas HaRosh, which also has the same problem in an entirely different context. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Menachos that one is exempt from putting tzitzit strings on a garment that's made of linen. Why? Even though normally, of course, a linen garment would be chayv in tzitzis. Some may hold maybe wool is the ideal garment for tzitzis. You know, maybe it's ideal to have a woolen tzitzis as opposed to cotton or certain nylon, some other material. We could discuss that another time. However, sadin, pishdan, linen, should really have required tzitzis, but Chazal exempted it. They said, no, you're not obligated to put tzitzis on a linen garment. Why not? Because tcheles requires wool strings. Lavan does not require wool strings. Techeles requires wool strings. Wool and linen, of course, is shatnez. So if you have a linen garment and you're going to have to use wool strings for techeles, that's going to be a problem of shatnez. Yeah, but even if there is shatnez in the tzitzis, the mitzvah of tzitzis overrides the prohibition of shatnez. That's the opinion of Beis Hillel in the Gemara Masechtas Yevamis, over here too, Masechtas Menachos, that the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze juxtaposes the mitzvah of gedilim tasalecha al arba kanfos kesuscha asher techaseba with the prohibition of shatnez. They're in two adjacent psukim. So what does that come to teach us? It comes to teach us that asay is doiche lois asay. The asay of tzitzis is doiche, pushes aside, overrides the prohibition of shatnez. So even though the tcheles has wool and the beged perhaps has pishtan, so what? Even if that is a problem of shatnez, asay doiche lois asay. Why am I then worried about shatnez in the tzitzis? So the Gemara says no. It's because there was counterfeit tcheles known as kala ilon. And maybe this person will become a victim of the counterfeiting market, and his, you know, wool strings will not be bona fide tcheles; they will be lavan strings. So you'll say, so Gemara asks in a very famous line, if you've ever investigated the tcheles issue, lo yehei kala ilan, lo yehei lavan. So what? It's still tzitzis. The mitzvah of tzitzis is doich hashanis. You don't need tcheles to be doich hashanis. The mitzvah of tzitzis is doich hashanis. Even if you're absent the tcheles, you don't have tcheles. Obviously, the mitzvah of tzitzis b'shleimus is with tcheles, but if you don't have tcheles, you're still, you know, it should be doicha, the aseh, the lois aseh of shatnez. So the Gemara says, no, because now, you didn't really need the wool. You could have done with linen strings. You didn't need, the white doesn't have to be wool. The loven could have been linen. So now, we wouldn't necessarily apply the principle of aseh doicha lois aseh. Aseh doicha lois aseh is only if there's no other option over here. The tcheles requires wool. The loven doesn't require wool. So if it would be kala ilon, You really don't have necessarily the grounds to say, asay, doicha lois asay. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. So therefore, they exempted sadin, a linen garment, from tzitzis. What about today? Or, you know, in the times of the Rishayim, they didn't have tcheles. Today, maybe, you know, some discovered tcheles. Maybe they rediscovered kala ilan. Who knows? We could discuss that another time. But in the times of the Rishayim, they didn't have tcheles. So what are you afraid of? Have a linen garment and put on linen strings. You don't need wool anymore. No one has tcheles anyway. There's no kala ilan, there's no tcheles. So put on linen, a linen garment should require linen strings and let it have tzitzis. The reason that motivated them to exempt linen garments from tzitzis entirely, which was because tcheles had to have wool, and maybe you'd be afraid that the tcheles is not really tcheles, it's kala ilan, which doesn't, you know, that's a whole story. That doesn't apply anymore. So you should be obligated to put on linen strings on a linen garment. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that, of course, linen is pater from tzitzis. But then the Rama quotes Mechuvas HaRosh and says, no, since the reason no longer applies, the Gzera no longer applies, the Kanan no longer applies, it exempted linen garments from tzitzis, and you're obligated to put on linen strings. Not everyone accepted this Chuvas HaRosh. Because already, as the Mishnah Berurah says, once Chazal made the Gzeira, it's a davar shebeminyan, tzarech minyan achalatiro. You can't just say, since the reason no longer applies, it exempted linen garments from tzitzis, because, you know, the tcheles and the counterfeit tcheles, that all of a sudden now it should be obligated in tzitzis. No. We say, once the rule is established, legislated by Chazal, it remains intact until such time that a subsequent basin will come and repeal it. But until, you know, until then, it remains in force. So how can you say, simply because the reason no longer applies to Gzeira, or the takana to exempt linen garments from tzitzis no longer applies? It's a problem over here with this Chuvas HaRosh too. It's controversial in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's certainly a problem. But it's not only there, and you know, the exceptions to this rule of Davar Shebeminyan Tzarech Minyan Achalatiro already perhaps will lead us in a direction of explaining why there are so many Makairos that seem to run afoul of this principle. Maybe there's an exception over here that they all fit into the same theme. But another time that you seem to have the Achrayim, at least, seem to ignore the principle of Davar Shebeminyan Tzarech Minyan Achalatiro is with regards to a halacha that we're all familiar with, that if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, of course we don't blow Tkiya Shofar. Why? Gemara says, in a few places, because of the Gzeira Derabba. What's the Gzeira Derabba? Shema Yavi Renu Da'oramas Birshus HaRabin. Maybe you'll end up taking the Shofar to the Bucky in order to learn how to blow, and you'll walk 4 Amos in the Birshus HaRabin in the process of doing so. So in order to prevent people from doing that, they exempted us from taking lulav, right, on Sukkot Shechalias B'Shabbos, or from blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. However, the Bir Halakha asks, but nowadays, the Shulchan Aruch writes in a few places, we don't have Rosh Hashanah anymore. Because in order to be a Rosh Hasharabim, according to some opinions, and this seems to be the opinion of Shulchan Aruch, you have to have 600,000 people that pass through this place every day. If not every day, at least on a regular basis, 600,000 people traverse this general area. That's what labels it as a Rosh Hasharabim. That's one of the necessary components as part of the definition of Rosh Hasharabim. In the times of the Rishonim, they didn't have that kind of density of population. We certainly have it in our time. Times Square has that, not during a pandemic, has that kind of foot traffic. They have clocked Penn Station. Penn Station on a daily basis has 600,000 people going through, over there. So we certainly have Rosh Hasharabim in our times, but in the times of Shulchan Aruch writes in a few places, we don't have Rosh Hasharabim anymore in our times, because they never had that density of population of 600,000 people passing through a specific area on a daily basis. They simply didn't have it. So Bialaka asks, if that's the case, so why couldn't they blow in the times of Shulchan Aruch? They don't have Rosh Hasharabim anymore. Why can't you blow Tkiyah Shofar, Rosh Hashanah, Shchalias B'Shabbos? What's the reason we don't do so? Gzeir the Rav Hashem, Yavi Ren without Amos Rosh Hasharabim. Maybe you'll carry the Shofar and Rosh Hasharabim for Amos, and you'll end up violating the Isser of Haitzah in order to blow Tkiyah Shofar, so they exempted us from Tkiyah Shofar entirely. But you don't have Rosh Hasharabim anymore. So the reason for the Gzeir no longer applies. Let's blow Tkiyah Shofar, Rosh Hashanah, Shchalias B'Shabbos. That's the kasha to be Bialaka has, and he leaves off with the Tzarachin. What are you talking about? I'll tell you why you don't do it. Because once they accepted the Gzeirah Rabba and it became accepted throughout Klal Yisrael, it was pashed to B'chol Yisrael. So you can't, you can't remove it, you can't repeal it simply because the reason no longer applies. Well, there's another argument that's made. That's a problem with that Bir Halacha. There's another argument that's made by R.T. Pesach Frank, quotes in the name of the Aderes, that was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, one of the early Yerushalmi Gdolim. So the Aderes had a kasha, the Gemara says, Masechtas Megillah, that all the mitzvahs that one is obligated to do during the day have to be done after Hanetzach Chama, L'chadchila. So L'chadchila, you're not supposed to daven Shachris until after Hanetzach Chama. That's davening Vasikin, you daven at the first possible moment of right after the sun rises. Or Kriyas HaMegillah should really be done after Hanetzach Chama. What if you did it from the time of Alois HaShachar, when the light of the sun begins to peak above the horizon, not the bowl of the sun, but the light of the sun begins to peak above the horizon? You did it from Alois HaShachar. So b'diyeved your yoytze b'nat l'chadchila. So you can daven, everyone knows you can daven b'diyeved from the time of Alois HaShachar, l'chadchila from after Hanetzach Chama. What about before Alois HaShachar? You can't daven Shachar. You can daven Ma'ariv maybe, right? That's still night. But you cannot daven Shachar's. So, but I understand, is it day at Alois HaShachar or is it not day? So maybe it's partially day. One could make that argument. It's partially day, not really day. You can make that argument. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, the reason why you can't daven after Alois HaShachar is, even though it is day, a gzeira d'rabbanan, you shouldn't do so lest you come to daven before Alois HaShachar when it's still dark, when it's still night. So as a gzeira, lest people come to daven when Shachar, when it's night, lest they come to read Megillah, Bayoim, when it's still night, they said, wait till Hanetzach Chama, when the blow of the sun rises above the horizon, that's when you should do the mitzvahs Hayoim, not beforehand, lest you come to do it at night. That's what Rashi writes in Maseches Megillah over here, the Me'alois HaShachar Yomamahu, over here, I sit on the sheet, Aval Fisha Eina Kol Bekiyim Boy, Tzichin Laham Denat Hanetzach Chama. Since not everybody knows when Alois HaShachar is, the blow of the sun, I could see, it's now in the sky, good, daven then. Don't play around with this Alois HaShachar business, you'll make a mistake and end up davening at night. However, the Sefer Mikroi Kodesh, where Tzvi Pesach Frank, he quotes in the name of the Aderes, both Yerushalmis, of course, that who asked the Kasha, he said, one minute, nowadays, we all have watches. Who's going to make a mistake about when Alois HaShachar is? Alois HaShachar is 72 minutes before Netzach Chama. So no one's going to end up davening at night. They knew when Netzach Chama was going to be. 72 minutes before then is Alois HaShachar. So you're not going to make a mistake and daven at night because you have a watch. This only made sense at the time they didn't have watches. But nowadays, it's easy to calculate. So why shouldn't you be able to daven lechachila already from the time of Alois HaShachar? Why should you have to wait till Hanetzach Chama? So he argued, maybe you can daven already lechachila nowadays from the times of Alois HaShachar. But what do you mean? How can we accept that? What happened to Davar Shabamini? It's Arachmini Nachalatiro. Chazal said, don't daven before Hanetzach Chama unless you come to daven at night. And that might have been motivated by a fear that you're going to come, to daven at night. But just because the reason no longer applies, that shouldn't necessarily follow that the gzeira no longer applies because of the principle of davar shebeminyan, tzarich minyan achatir. When a piece of legislation is made, a gzeira takana requires a subsequent bezin to repeal it. It doesn't cease to function just because the reason no longer applies. So these are all problematic statements by the Rishonim, by the Achrayim. How can we, reconcile this? So the Achrayim all struggle with this issue. There's a tshuva in the Torah Chesed, that's the Lublin Rav, who goes back and forth and, kind of throws up his hands at the end. It's a very difficult issue to figure out. When do we say that because the reason for the Gzera no longer applies, the Gzera also no longer applies? And no longer continues to function. And when do we say that, despite the fact that the reason no longer applies, that since the Gzera no longer applies, since the reason no longer applies, the Gzera no longer continues to function. When do we say that that is the case? When do we say, it continues to function anyway, even though the reason no longer applies? Very tricky. So if Shechter in his Sefer Eretz HaTzvi quotes in the name of the Mishkanes Yaakov, has a tshuva in his Sefer called Koheles Yaakov, where he makes the following suggestion. That perhaps the answer to, and this perhaps be applied to all of these examples that we mentioned, with the exception of one, perhaps we can explain all of this with the following idea. And that is, whenever Chazal established a piece of legislation, either Gzeira or Takana, they did so for a reason. They have to have had a reason. They can't do so arbitrarily. And this is based on the Pasuk in Parshas Achrei Mois, of Ushmartim es Mishmarti, you should be careful to guard my prohibitions, Asu Mishmeres l'Mishmarti, make a siyag l'Torah, make boundaries around the prohibitions. So the authority of Chazal, in general, is based, of course, on the Pasuk of V'osasim enadav v'shiyagidu chayimin u'smol, don't turn right or left from that which Chazal, the Rabbanim, tell you to do. But when are they supposed to create legislation, takanos and gzeiros? Is when it's a siyag l'Torah, when it's a boundary to protect one of the prohibitions of the Torah. Right? I say siyag l'Torah. And they have the right to create this kind of legislation in order to do so. But it has to be for a reason. It has to be for a purpose. In fact, the Prima Gadim writes, if it's not for a purpose, it's baltaisif. They have no right to just arbitrarily create hurdles for us to make life more difficult. If they do so, it's baltaisif. It's adding to the mitzvahs of the Torah. They themselves are not allowed to do that. They're only allowed to do it for a reason. The question, though, is, when Chazal established the Takana for a reason, did they include the reason in the language of the legislation, of the Takana and the Gzera? In which case, if the reason no longer applies, the Gzera and Takana should also no longer apply, because it was included in the language, the stipulations, conditions of this Gzera Takana. Or did they not include the reason in the language of the legislation? In which case, the legislation applies carte blanche, irregardless of if the reason continues to apply or not. So did Chazal include the language, the reason for the Takana, the Gzera, in the language of legislation or not, should dictate whether or not, what should happen if the reason no longer applies. If the reason was included, so then the Gzera should no longer apply when the reason is no longer, applicable. If the reason was not included, then the Gzera or Takana should continue to function. If it was included, then when the reason no longer applies, the Gzera and the Takana should also no longer apply. So it should depend on whether or not it was included, the reason was included in the piece of legislation. Yeah, but how do we know? How are we ever to know, as observers, when the Chazal include the reason in the piece of legislation, when not? So it's very hard to figure out. However, perhaps, the Kivos Yaakov suggests, and that's the Mishkanes Yaakov's Tshuva Sefer, that perhaps if they're telling us not to fulfill a mitzvah, they had to tell us why we're doing it. They had to include the reason in the piece of legislation, because they have no right to override a pasuk in the Torah, to contradict a mitzvah in the Torah. For example, the Taz writes, we know you're not allowed to play musical instruments on Shabbos or Yontif. You're not allowed to do it. You can't play a harp or violin Shabbos or Yontif. You can't play a violin on Rosh Hashanah. So how are we allowed to blow shofar? Chazal should have said, why are you not allowed to play a violin on Rosh Hashanah? Gzeira Shema, the violin will break you, come to fix it. So how are you allowed to blow shofar? Shofar is a trumpet. You can't blow a trumpet. How are you allowed to blow a shofar? Should have been usher. So the Taz is, why was shofar not included in the Gzeira Shema Yisak and Klei Shir? So the Taz says, because Chazal can't tell you not to fulfill a mitzvah in the Torah, otherwise they would legislate out the mitzvah of Shofar. They can't do that. They can't do away with a pasuk in the Torah, because Dinim Darabanan also are part of the larger fabric landscape of Torah midairaisa. Dinim Darabanan also part of Torah. It's not bitul Torah to study Dinim Darabanan, because Dinim Darabanan are also part of Torah. So it has to fit into the larger mosaic of dinim d'oraisa. That's why we have sometimes called the tikkun rabbanan kein d'oraisa tikkun. Chazal were geizer, you know, made takanas in the fashion of dinim d'oraisa, because it has to fit into that larger pattern, that larger landscape and institution. So if that's the case, if they're telling us, they're not legislating out Kiyas Shofar, but they're telling you if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you're not supposed to go to Kiyas Shofar, they have to tell us why. Because otherwise, their legislation contradicts the Pasuk in the Torah. They have to say, no, no, this is a siyog, lest you come to do this. Lest you come to carry Abraham's B'shus HaRavim. But they had to tell us why we're doing it, if we're forfeiting, if we're giving up a mitzvah, you know, a performance of a mitzvah. So in all of these examples that we mentioned, Chazal here are telling us not to do a mitzvah, right? There's a mitzvah of Yerusha, that a father should distribute his assets equally amongst his children, giving a double portion to the Bechor. Here they're saying, don't do that. Give it all to the child of this one wife, because she brought the dowry into the marriage. You gotta tell me why I'm doing that. It's a mitzvah, otherwise a mitzvah, to distribute assets equally amongst the children. You gotta tell me why. Therefore, the ksuba's been indichron. If the reason no longer applies, maybe the takana no longer applies too. Or, let's say, for example, sadim betzitzis. Not the exempted linen garments and tzitzis. Why? So you have to explain to me, why are you exempting linen garments? Because maybe we'll run a problem of shatnez, not with real tcheles, but with kaliyah. They have to include the reason, and therefore, if tcheles no longer exists, this gzera, or this takana, to exempt sadim betzitzis, linen garments should no longer apply. The other example that we had was Rosh Hashanah, shechaliyos b'shabbos. What was the other one? The other one was, what was the other one, Chemer? What was the other? Oh, davening before an Eitzach Hamah. So don't daven before an Eitzach. Why can I not daven now? You're telling me to forfeit a time to do a mitzvah. Why should I not daven? Maybe it's ideal to even daven before an Eitzach Hamah at the first possible moment. So why are you waiting, telling me to wait till the bull of the sun rises and not from the time that the sun, you know, the light of the sun begins to peak above the horizon? I can't daven from, and they have to tell me that's because you were afraid you might come to daven at night. So if that's the case, they had to include the reason in the language of the legislation. Now the argument of the Adaris is quite compelling. If the reason was included, well, nowadays we all have watches, maybe this rule should no longer apply. Because here Chazal is telling us, sit on your hands and don't do a mitzvah. You got to tell me why I'm doing it. Otherwise, the din d'rabbanan is flying in the face of rules midoraisa, which they don't have the right to do. So they had to give me the reason in the legislation, and therefore that regulates the application of the legislation. When the reason applies, it would exist. When it doesn't apply, it might not exist. All of this, though, which is fantastic explanation of the Kehilas Yaakov, would not help us with our Taisus and Beitza. Taisus and Beitza says, you know, when they tell you not to clap and dance, they're not telling you to abort, to forfeit a mitzvah at all. So how did Taisus know over here that the reason for the Gzeira was included in the Nusach of the Gzeira, such that if we're not afraid anymore, the people can come to fix instruments of Shabbos and Yontif, then now we can permit clapping and dancing. How did he know that? How did he know that just because the reason no longer applies to Gzeira should no longer apply? What happened to Davish HaBeminyan, Tzarech Minyan HaKalatiro? So this part of the explanation of the Kiyos Yaakov would not help us justify Tosis and Beitza. But perhaps we can just add one Nekuda, which might help us, you know, perhaps understand and grapple a little bit better with Taisus and Beitza. Because Taisus writes in Beitza earlier, on the Vav and Aleph, that we have a prohibition by Chazal known as Mayim Megulim. Mayim Megulim is a Gemara Masechta Schulin, that if you leave water uncovered for a certain period of time, and unsupervised, we have to be afraid that a snake came and deposited some venom into the water, and therefore the water, you know, is dangerous to drink. And therefore it's prohibited. Chamira sekanta meisura, because of ushmarta miyod l'nafshu seichem. You have to be careful, guard your own life, and to do safe activities. So over here it's dangerous to drink the mayim megulim. Maybe a snake deposited some venom in the water. So Chazal prohibited mayim megulim. So Taisus writes in Masechtas Beitza, nowadays this prohibition of Mayim Megulim no longer applies. We don't have snakes in our communities. I don't know, I think in Florida they do have snakes, but over here we don't have snakes. Taisus didn't have snakes in his communities. We don't have to be careful about Mayim Megulim anymore. This opinion of Taisus is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that Mayim Megulim, Akshu She'ein Achashim Mitzuyim Beineinu, Mutar. The Piskei Tshuva quotes from the Shlach HaKadosh, and that was the opinion of the Goyin as well. Not Meikar Adin, but they, you know, for other reasons, they felt one should continue to be careful about Mayim Megulim, and therefore you have pockets in our community that are very careful about Mayim Megulim. They will not drink water that was left uncovered and unsupervised. Whether because of the fear of the snakes or because they feel that there were larger issues at play when Chazal established this Isser of Mayim Megulim. But either way, Taisus says, at least Meikar Adin, Mayim Megulim no longer applies because we live in communities that don't have snakes depositing venom in the water supply. Fine, no longer applies. But what happened to Davar Shebeminyan? This was a Tekanas Chazal. How did Taisus know that, because the reason no longer applies, the Xerah no longer applies? So the Taz already perhaps gives us a glimpse into this issue, that it's because this was so strange. And not because they were telling us to violate or to abridge or to forfeit a mitzvah midaraisa, but over here this was so strange that they should prohibit unsupervised water that Chazal had to tell us why. Otherwise people would just be like, what? Why should we not be permitted to drink a cup of water? What could be asur in a cup of water? So they had to tell us, no, it's because maybe the Nachash deposited some venom in the water. So the reason had to be included in the legislation, not because they're telling us to override or abridge a mitzvah in the process, but because it was so inexplicable, so enigmatic, they had to tell us, why are we doing this? So then one could surmise also that the reason was probably included in the legislation. That's why Taisa says, Davar Shebeminyan, Tzarech Minyan Achvatir, doesn't apply over here to Mayim Megulim. Perhaps just working backwards, we could suggest that that's what Taisus means with regards to clapping and dancing too. This was so cryptic. Why should you not be able to clap and dance on Shabbos? In fact, if you'd ask most people most people are probably not even aware of the issue, but even if they are, Lav Dafka necessarily that they would have intuited the reason for it. It's so odd. So they had to have included the reason in the Takana, because otherwise people just simply wouldn't have listened because it was so strange to them. So therefore, Taisus might argue, since they inevitably had to include the reason for the Gzeirah of the Takana in the piece of legislation, because otherwise it was hard to explain, so it must be, therefore, that when the reason no longer applies, the Gzeirah of the Takana also no longer applies. Maybe that's what Taisus means there, too. Ramesh is a different argument. Ramesh suggests, the Gemara already said, in order for a Takana Gzeirah to be enforced, it has to be accepted by Klal Yisrael. If it was never accepted by Klal Yisrael, the Gzeirah never remains in force. And over here, it already says, people were always clapping and dancing. Sounds like they never really even accepted this Gzeirah in the first place. So if Klal Yisrael never accepted the Gzeirah, it's not what's known as a Gzeirah She'ein Atziba Yachal Amad Ba. It's just too onerous for Klal Yisrael to maintain this kind of lifestyle, that the Gzeirah doesn't gain any traction because it's simply too difficult for Klal Yisrael. It never is pushed to the Klal Yisrael. It's never accepted. So then the Gzeirah no longer applies to it, falls away immediately. So it sounds perhaps from the Gemara already, Ramesha says, that this Gzeirah never had any traction. Already in times of the Gemara, they weren't careful about it. So the Gemara said it's permitted because Mutav Shushayim Vayim Mezidin, but already seems to imply that this Gzeirah didn't really perhaps have traction even from the beginning. Lemaisa is, that's the position of Taisus. How do we paskin an issue of clapping and dancing? Taisus said it's permitted because the reason for the Gzeirah no longer applies, so the Gzeirah no longer applies to. How do we paskin on this issue? So the Rama writes, the Shulchan Aruch over here, Shin Lama Tesef Gimel quotes the Yisra, you're not allowed to clap and dance on Shabbos and Yontif. The Rama writes that people do this, over here on the third line, V'had the Mesapin Merakin Idna, V'lo Machinu B'lo Mishim Demutiv Shu Shoygen. Better that they do so B'Shoygen than they do so B'Mezin. So we let it continue because people are not going to listen to us anyway. That's not a glowing endorsement. That really means if we could convince people to do it, to refrain from doing it, we probably should. Then the Rama says, V'yishayim in the Bizman Hazeh, Kol Shari, he quotes twice, says maybe nowadays the whole thing is permitted. Because since the reason no longer applies, the Gzeirah no longer applies. V'efshar shal zeh nagul l'hak b'kol. Perhaps this is also figures in to the calculation and the reason that we are lenient. So the Ramas here seems to assume that it's permitted, or we allow it to remain, we allow this to continue for a combination of factors. The first is Mutiv Shushayim Vayim Mezidin, and anyway, Taisvis says maybe it's permitted, but it doesn't sound like he fully accepts Taisvis. Sounds like it's because partially Mutiv Shushayim Vayim Mezidin. So this leads the Mishnah Berura to infer, and this already inference already made by the Nedib Yehuda, that this is not really ideal. If a person can convince his community not to clap and dance on Shabbos and Yontif, probably should attempt to do so. And one who is, one who wants to follow what is advisable should refrain from clapping and dancing on Shabbos and Yontif. In the end of the day, though, the Rama says that it's permitted, and we don't protest against those who do it. So therefore, Ramesha writes in the Gris Maisha, the Archa Shulchan, they assume that it's mutter meikar adin. even though the Ramah also factors into his equation, Mutiv Shushayim Vayim Ezidim, which is not an endorsement. That's basically just saying people won't listen to us, in which case, if you have a receptive audience, you should inform them of the halacha. Ramesh assumes that perhaps this Gzera never gained any traction, and the Ramah here was Meiko Meikar Adin, that clapping and dancing is permitted on Shabbos and Yantav. So to Machlekes HaPaiskim, how opposed should we really be to this issue? But many assume, like the Mishnah Berurah, like the Neid Behuda, that it's really something that's frowned upon and should therefore, you know, be avoided. But even though Meikar Adin, maybe it is permitted. The Aruch HaShulchan and Rabbi Avadah discuss different stadim lahakel, that maybe our clapping and dancing is not the same as their clapping and dancing. They used to clap and dance according to the rhythm of instrumental music. That's why instruments play so heavily into the clapping and dancing. How's clapping and dancing going to lead me to fix an instrument? Aruch HaShulchan says, must be they were clapping and dancing to the rhythm of instruments. He says, but nowadays, if we don't clap and dance to the rhythm of instruments, it shouldn't necessarily apply to our clapping and dancing. Rabbi Avadah doesn't like this at all, but he does quote others who say maybe our dancing is not the same as their dancing. So maybe either our clapping and our clapping and dancing is not the same in terms of the context. You always did so in the, you know, together with instruments. But maybe our dancing that we just walk around in a circle is not, Simchas Torah is real dancing, but maybe our dancing where we just walk around in a circle is really not that big of a deal. It's not real dancing, as you've heard many say, probably. And therefore should never run afoul of this problem of clapping and dancing in Shabbos Yontif, because our dancing anyway is not real dancing. There are those, Sodom Lekula, but there are those again who refrain from the whole thing that the Mishnah Berurah recommends. And they don't accept any of these arguments that our music is not the same as their music, clapping and dancing is not the same as their clapping and dancing. And therefore, there are some who refrain from it, some not. On Simchas Torah, though, everyone is lenient. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Ma'arik, the truth of the Ma'arik, that it's because it's the Kavod HaTorah is permitted. All of this is permitted. The Kavod Simchas Torah, the Kavod HaTorah. Okay, what about the Kavod other mitzvahs? So Mishnah Berurah says, no, only Kavod HaTorah, not for a Shever Brachis, not for a Siyum, not to make Lebedik and an Einig Shabbos, only Kavod HaTorah, that's it. As it says in Mishnah Berurah, in the name of the Prima Gadim. The Eisha Avram, that's the Buchacha Rav, in his commentary in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, argues, why? Why should you draw the line? If you're going to make an exception for Kavod Mitzvah or Kavod HaTorah, why should you say it's only Kavod HaTorah and not Kavod Shever Brachas and not for Einik Shabbos? Why is it only Kavod Simchas Torah? See, no, it's Lav Davka. If a person, it enhances his davening to clap and dance, then he can clap and dance during davening too. If it enhances his Shabbos to clap and dance, he can clap and dance on Shabbos too. L'kavod Shabbos, l'kavod Shever Brachas. The Eish Avram says this is all derived from the Heter of Simchas Torah. You want to reject the whole Heter of Simchas Torah, that's fine. You could do that. But once you're going to accept the Heter of Simchas Torah, so why should we distinguish between Kavod HaTorah and Kavod Shabbos or Kavod, you know, or Simchas Chasim Vekala? And this opinion was accepted. Now, he's not a Chassidisha, the Buchacharov. This was, of course, though, adopted by many Chassidish circles, in a formal tshuva by the Munkacher Rebbe and his Minchas Alazar, who argues, what's the difference between Simchas Torah and other Simchas Shel Mitzvah? It should all be permitted just like Simchas Torah. He says, very, I think humorously, he says, Misnagdim, who don't enjoy clapping and dancing, for you it's usher, because it doesn't enhance your Shabbos experience, it doesn't enhance your davening. But if you have a Chassidish heart, that this enhances your davening to clap and dance, so then, then it should be permitted. It seems to me, though, that this is clapping and dancing. No one says, that this is a reason, Tyson Bates is a reason to permit playing musical instruments on Shabbos and Yantif. No one says, since we don't know how to fix musical instruments, you can play a violin or an organ on Shabbos and Yantif. No. You can clap and dance, maybe. That was Tyson Bates. But not that you can play a musical instrument. The Mishnah Berurah is very quick to make that point. So therefore, it seems to me that even though many are lenient to clap and dance on Shabbos and Yantif, particularly if it enhances the davening, right? Chassidish places and a lot of people clapping and dancing, very nice. Minchas Elazar, that was already the Buchacharov, based on the carve-out, based on the exception for Simchas Torah. It seems to me, though, of course, you cannot play a musical instrument. So what's included in the prohibition of playing a musical instrument? So the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch, over here, Shin Lam Ches Sif Aleph, that one is not allowed not only to play a musical instrument, but any item that is made for making noise is considered to be a musical instrument on Shabbos and Yantif. So, for example, the Ramah says you should not use a door knocker. If you ever have seen those doors that have door knockers on the front door, you shouldn't use such a door knocker on Shabbos and Yantif, because that is made to make noise. Made to make noise is considered to be included in the Gzeira Shema Yisak and Klei Shir. Even if it's not made to make musical noise, just noise, already included in the Gzeir Sheet, should not use a door knocker on Shabbos. What about, though, to knock with my hand? Of course, that is, you know, that is permitted. As long, says the Shulchan Aruch, as it's not done in a musical way. So you can knock with your hand on the door. The door is not an instrument that's made to make noise. The door knocker is made to make noise. That you can't do, even if it's not musical. To knock on the door with your fist, you can do with a knuckle, unless it's musical, right? If you, let's say you're that sticky, you're that guy who goes na 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 na. That I don't think you should do on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Hashma is called b'klei shir aser lahakish haladeres v'chayotzei bazeh kisheino derech shir. When it's not, maybe a jingle, it's not a shir, but kisheino derech shir is mutter. If it's derech shir, really shouldn't do it. But if it's made to make noise, even if it's eino derech shir, it's prohibited. So that's why Ramesh writes, for example, that's why microphones are prohibited on Shabbos, even if you turned it on before. Because this is an instrument that is made to make noise. So even if you're just speaking into the microphone, that's Gzeirah Shemi Yisakin Klei Shir. Because it's made to make noise. It's like the door knocker. Or for that reason, I think also you shouldn't really have, at all, have an Alexa announce your sports scores or news Shabbos morning, even if I could program it to do so beforehand, because this is an instrument that's made to make noise. So even though I programmed the whole thing before Shabbos, it's playing on Shabbos. I might come to fix it on Shabbos. No different than, you know, having music playing throughout Shabbos, even if I'm not doing it on Shabbos. I might cut for breaks, I might come to fix it on Shabbos. I don't think it's the same as an alarm clock. An alarm clock has other functions. It's really made to tell the time. It also happens to make noise, but that's not the main function of a cell phone, or the main function of a clock is to make noise. Its main function is to tell time or do whatever phones normally do. Alexa is made to make noise. A door knocker is made to make noise. A microphone is made to make noise. Ah, so then you shouldn't use such a thing on Shabbos at all. But getting back, what about knocking on the door? So as long as it's not derech shir, that's permitted. What if it is derech shir? Then it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't do it. So what about clapping and dancing in shul? Okay, Taisus and Beitza, the whole story. Maybe it enhances your davening. It's just like Simchas Torah. What about banging on the omud? You hear people banging on the table. So if a guy is tapping along to the measure, I think that's called, right? What do you happen? What in the music, you know, the beat? So if you're tapping along like this, like he's tapping his foot, okay, so that's, maybe it was even a reflex, I don't know. But, you know, I don't think that's to contribute too much, just to make sure that the pace of the song stays and they don't speed up too fast. What about those, some guys you see, you know, guys like he's has a whole drumming band going on. So I don't think that's right. I'd say glasses with water. So if you want to tap on the side of a glass at a simcha to get people's attention, it says in Mishneh Berurah, that's allowed. Or let's say after someone speaks, applaud. From communities, they don't do that. But it says Mishneh Berurah, that's allowed. Applause is permitted. It's not musical at all. Some people you see clapping B'derech Shinoi. B'derech Shinoi is always mutter. That's true. You can clap like this. But clapping as applause is really mutter maker adin. It's not musical at all. Clapping with your hands, banging on the table is mutter, you know, maybe, unless it's not musical. If it's musical, so banging on the table might be worse than clapping. Maybe clapping we could be matzah b'derech mitzvah, but banging on the table now is a klei shir. If it's derech shir, that's included in the gzeirah shem yisakin klei shir, like an instrument. No one will be makel for instruments today, even though we don't know how to fix them. So banging on the table, like some guys are doing like a whole percussion story over there. At every Shabbaton, there's one guy who knows how to work the table like a drum. I don't think that that's right. I think that that's like, that's derech shir mamish. You know, it's like glasses with different water. You can have guys play the whole national anthem with those kinds of things. I don't think that's right at all. One final ha'ara, chevra, is clapping. If you ever watched a video from Uman and Rosh Hashanah, you see them clapping before Baruch Hu. Anyone know what I'm talking about? They clap before Baruch Hu, they clap before HaMelech. Everyone stops and claps like this. And the Dafka clap like this, with the hands together. Never see such a thing. So where does that come from? That's because Rabbi Nachman emphasized in Kutim Aran and a few Mamorim, emphasize clapping heavily, and it's connected to Parshas HaShavua. He emphasized clapping as a preparation for tefillah, because he argued it creates the proper atmosphere for tefillah and opens up our mouths to tefillah. How does it create the proper atmosphere for tefillah? So he was commenting on the first Rashi, Parshas Breishis, where Rashi says, why is it the Torah began with Breishis? But okay, it should have begun with the first mitzvah. The Torah is a book of mitzvah, it's not a history book. So it should have begun with, not the history of the world, it should have begun with the first mitzvah. So obviously it's a manual for life, which involves a lot more than just mitzvahs. It involves midas and all the, you know, stuff that's mentioned here. However, Rashi explains that it's based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Koyach Masav Higli Yamai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to inform Klal Yisrael, or the world, of the greatness of his actions, that he created the world, and therefore he has the right to divvy up and give ownership of different properties to different people, and he gave Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. And the whole world needs to know that. So therefore, he began, Kadosh Baruch Hu began the Torah with Parashas Bereishis. Koyach Masav Higiliyamo. So Eretz Yisrael is rooted in the pasuk of Koyach Masav Higiliyamo. Koyach, of course, Gematria 28. So Rabbi Nachman writes, and this is not his Ha'ara, this you find in many Sfarim, that in the hands you have 14 knuckles. In each of the four longer fingers you have three, and the thumb you have two. That's 14. So in each hand you have 14 knuckles, Gematria Yad. That's why the hand is called Yad, is because it has 14 knuckles. When you put the two 14 knuckles together in each hand, you clap, you get 28. That's Koyach Masav, that's right. Koychi va'oitzim yodi. Koychi, my strength is my two hands. Va'oitzim yodi. 14 and 14 together is Koychi. So Koyach Masav higili yamoi, and Eretz Yisrael is represented by this puzzle, Koyach Masav higili yamoi, also has to do with the two hands coming together and clapping. So Benachman argued like this. He said, when you clap with your two hands coming together in, you know, in symmetry, not your fingers in your palm, but the two fingers coming together like this, you're pushing away the air in between them. So Rabbi Nachman said, when you push away the air in between them, you're pushing away the avir of Chutz La'aretz, and therefore creating room for the avir, the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael to exist. So before davening, it's important to do this, because you remove the tumah of Chutz La'aretz and create the proper atmosphere, the proper makom for tefillah, by clapping and bringing in the avir of Eretz Yisrael. And of course, the makom where a person is davening plays heavily into his tefillah and whether the tefillah is accepted, right? It should be koveh makom with tefillah, so, and we daven towards Eretz Yisrael. So if a person claps his hands, that creates the proper avira, that creates the proper environment for tefillah. And he argued, it opens up the mouth for tefillah. How do you know that? Because each one of the fingers, right, there's five fingers in each hand, together that's 10. He said, you're supposed to clap five times, like this, five times, fingers against fingers, not fingers in the palm of your hand, because he says, kaf al kaf, palm to palm, fingers to fingers. Why? Five times, because that's gematria 50. Yetzias Mitzrayim appears in the Torah 50 times. What occurred at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim? How did we end up there in the first place? Yosef spoke Lashon Hara about his brothers. Vayove Yosef es diba samra al avihem. And therefore, part of the focus of Godos of Mitzrayim was Godos Hadibur. That's why Paro, the Zohar HaKadosh says, Paro is a Rosh Tevis, or a combination of two words, a pera, bad speech. Moshe Rabbeinu in Mitzrayim was kvad peh, u kvad lashon. He was limited in his koyach of speech. He had a disability a little bit. He had a lisp. So Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to speak fully, kvad peh, u kvad lashon, because Godos Mitzrayim was Godos of Dibur. How do we get out of Golos Mitzrayim? Pesach, which the Ari HaKadosh says is a combination of two words, peh, mouth, sach, speaking. We get out of Mitzrayim by speaking through Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, called Marber L'Saper V'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Harezeh Meshubach. So we speak our way out of Mitzrayim. We were redeemed, and one of the schools, Shulo Shinu Es L'Shainam, we didn't change our language. So we speak our way out of Mitzrayim. Golos of Mitzrayim was Golos of Dibur. We get out of it by redeeming our Koyach of speech. How many times does Yetzias Mitzrayim mention the Torah? 50 times. So you should clap your hands, 5 and 5, 10, 5 times, azoi. That's 50 times your fingers are going against each other, 50 times reminds us of the golos, the geula from Mitzrayim, and that opens up our mouths, Hashem Sfosai Tiftach, Ufi Yagig Tilosecha, that opens up our mouth in order to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. He claims that's what the Pshat in the Pasuk is in Parashat Shmois. Me, some peli adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't worry about your speech impediment when you're going to speak on my behalf to Paro, because me, some peli adam, me, is a gematria, mem and yud, gematria 50, 50 opens up the mouth, me, some peli adam, who opens up mouths for people. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, of course, I have the ability to endow speech, and I will give you the proper ability to, the koichos necessary in order to speak on my behalf to Paro. So therefore, Rabbi Nachman claims it's important to clap before davening, in order to open up the pathways of speech and to create the proper environment of bringing in the avir of Eretz Yisrael. Now, this kind of clapping, I don't think anyone would hold it. I say it like this. If it's permitted during the week, that this fits into traditional Yiddishkeit, if you believe this is, if this is mutter during the week, it's mutter on Shabbos and Yom Tov too. There's no musical dimension here at all. This is, I guess, enhancing the tefillah in a kind of like a pause. It isn't musical at all. So I say it like this. If it's mutter during the week, it's mutter on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but I'm not taking a stand on that one way or the other. But it's just interesting how clapping has become a very big part of davening in general. If you do see people clapping and dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's certainly sufficient grounds to rely on. But we understand also why some people perhaps refrain from doing it, and each community should continue to do as they are accustomed. All right, Chevra.